Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats and also studio chats with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is presented this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. For more than 40 years, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. And their experienced team can walk you through the whole process, side by side, from test drive to service oil changes and beyond. I've loved tooling about the southern backroads and super highways this season in a Townsend Honda CR-V. And now I'm hooked on the great gas mileage, the comfortable maneuverability, and that backup camera for parallel parking success. Visit townsendhonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Automotive salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. The Southern Fork's culinary sponsor is Shermer Pecans. It's baking season, and in the South, that often means baking with pecans. From pecan pies to cookies to sticky buns topped in syrup, pecans play an important role in many of the sweet classics of the Southern table. Shermer is a classic too. Fifth generation growers in South Georgia who turned me on to just how good a fresh pecan can be. They're harvesting them right now to be on your holiday table this season, and they have lots of different size and package options. Visit ShermerPecans.com to place your order or to order a sweet treat for gifts, such as dark chocolate covered pecans, available by the case, and they arrive already perfectly wrapped in green foil packaging. That's ShermerPecans.com, ShermerPecans.com. Taste how good a fresh pecan can be this season. Hello and welcome to the finale of season 6 of the Southern Fork. As you know, this is Stephanie and it is just you and me together today. No guests are going to be joining us. This is a whole, what I like to call, talking with my mouthful segment. I do one of these a year and look back at some things I've learned behind the scenes and also some trends I saw and some things that I'd like to predict for the coming year. So no need to read any more of those retrospectives. You can just hit play and do a chore or chop some vegetables and listen. First off, I really want to take a look back. Just when it comes to restaurants and cooking, we definitely, the biggest news obviously is still the pandemic, which we're in the middle of, yet again, another surge, and there's definite whiplash there. But beyond that, it's the idea of an intense labor shortage. We are in the middle of a restaurant revolution, and I think a lot of that is coming from people having time to pause. I'm going to plant a
flag in the idea that it is not people wanting to be lazy and being on unemployment. That is not my experience at all, or the experience that I've heard from a lot of people. It is that time giving people pause in order to realize how much of a grind and how little pay many restaurant jobs are. And so coming back into that, the workers, the labor is actually demanding more. So there is a big sharp divide between restaurants that are fully staffed and those that are struggling. And a lot of the people that you've listened to on this show are fully staffed because they are focusing on the sustainability of their employees and their workforce at not just the bottom line. So as inflation rises, prices and all of that, there is some tension there, and a lot of tension there. But restaurants are combating that in different ways. They're generally not open as many hours as they were pre-2020. They're paying more and caring more about time off. So I think this is a good thing. And I'm going to leave it at that. When it comes to my guests, I really wanted to focus on the positive and not focus on really so much looking back, but at people that really inspired me. Per usual, I am inspired weekly on this show. So if I am not mentioning this in an interview specifically that you enjoyed, it doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy it. It just means that in order to really get on this show, I have to really have curiosity and have excitement and really a little dose of inspiration from my guest in order to sit down with them and spend some time. There were three people that really just shared little tidbits when it comes to change, and I wanted to highlight them. And these are three people and three things that they're doing that I really would like to see more of. First up was Adam Evans of Automatic Seafood and Oysters in Birmingham, Alabama. He is really pretty much obsessed with seafood. His magic picnic basket was still all seafood, even though he cooks seafood on the daily. He is now working with a sports fisherman to actually get some of that fish that has been caught through spear fishing. And I think that that's a really interesting place to start to look for a more sustainable or no waste or just a little eddy of potential product there up and down the Eastern Seaboard. I think this idea of thinking about an individual spear fisherman who does it commercially or does it professionally, like on a competition circuit, connecting with the chef, I think that there's a lot of potential there. I'm not saying it will change the world, but there's going to have to be a lot of small little changes as far as our supply chains go in order to create a sustainable seafood really system that is very stable. So we don't have to fight closures and overfishing, that we can actually protect our oceans and the future of our ecosystem while still eating delicious seafood. And I think spearfishing is something that I'd love to hear more about. And I'd love for more chefs to seek out a spear fisherman in their area to really partner with. Even if you only get a few fish a year or even a few fish a month, it might be really, really worth your time. The next thing that really inspired me was Jamie Rosenthal of Roots Down in Atlanta, Georgia. He's actually working with Cobb County, and I had to really think about this when I was doing this interview. they are converting plantings, just decorative plantings, into mini food forests. And it's at places like libraries and outside coffee shops. And I just had never really considered the idea of a decorative plant like, you know, evergreen shrub being replaced with a blueberry outside of a library. And it's just really passive food. But they're also making sure that that food, if it isn't already just picked and in the hands of the taxpayers that go to check out a book at the library and want to grab a blueberry snack, it goes to insecure food folks. So in other words, it goes to food closets, is what we called them when I was young, or food hubs, and really gets into the hands of people that need it. So it's a great use of space that you're already paying for and actually utilizing that space to help feed literally the people that are in the area. So I thought that was really just hard for me to wrap my brain around, because I think about the medians and stuff, and I talked a lot about like changing the medians and from mowing grass to having, you know, some kind of edible plant in them. But the idea of taking decorative plants and using that land, transferring decorative plants into edible landscapes on government property or on commercial property is just a really innovative idea. And then this fall, I talked with Sarah Beer, who is a forager and food writer and cookbook author, and she talked to us all about pawpaws. But I was really inspired by this idea that she takes the same walk multiple times a week, and she learns how to forage right off her neighborhood, and she learns the plants, and it just, and she said something that was really important to me. She said, "I'm not foraging for my whole pantry. It's just always like a little addition that there's something foraged on the plate. It might just be a few mushrooms or some wild herb that's been made into a seasoning." So I like this idea of suburban foraging, or, you know, there's edges of the wild, and I enjoy that idea, that concept. That was very formative to me growing up. I grew up on a suburban street, but there was a vacant lot, wooded lot next to us, and that just fed my imagination. But I'm sure there were an edible plant or two in there. I'm also sure that if I would have been interested in that as a child, I probably would have eaten the poison ivy. So anyway, when it comes to the most enthusiastic interview that I did this season, I think it probably has to be Lee Pantazis of Gus's Hot Dogs in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm telling you, this person has a current of energy through him, and he was so fun to interview. He talks a mile a minute. It was great to sit and have a hot dog and watch him talk to everybody in line and ask them questions. And he had so many thoughts, so many things to say. He is so energetic and in this iconic, very old school hot dog joint, he's really found a home. And I just loved having the chance to talk with him. I didn't know where that interview was going to go. So if you really want to learn a little bit about Birmingham history and just hear the enthusiasm in his voice, I would highly recommend going back and listening to that interview. There were lots of people this season that, in my opinion, were a long time coming as far as getting a chance to interview them or making the time to interview them or the time being right to interview them. First up was another Birmingham native, and that's Brian Hart Hoffman. He is co-CEO of Hoffman Media, and he and I had known each other for years. He is the editor of Bake From Scratch, and when I was there in Birmingham, they were doing a Bake From Scratch baking retreat. So it worked out that I got to see him, reconnect with him. And we have been talking about doing a podcast for years. So it was really fun to learn that he didn't grow up loving baking, that he really came to it as an adult, and what he really has done with that platform, with that community, is breathtaking. Not only is it a magazine, but it's a true baking community that connects on social media, connects in person, and it's number one, really delicious to be around, but two, very much a community. The next person is Lou Thoman in Savannah. Lou and I spoke years ago about Yaupon Holly. I love to write about specific heirloom ingredients, and Yaupon Holly is a native plant. It's the only native caffeinated plant in North America, and Lou got excited about it in a way that makes my excitement about it just seem minimal. Lou changed his life. He was a rice trader, and all of a sudden he decided to start growing Yaupon Holly and see if he could propagate it. It's mainly a wild plant. And so he really went on this big journey, and you know, he's got all kinds of teas and tinctures and just so much. So it helped him reconnect with the land in a new way. And also, you know, give us a new product to sip and taste and enjoy. And he has a tea room in Savannah, Georgia. And it's a really serene oasis in the middle of, you know, the tourist district. Marcy Cohen Ferris, my association with her, at least professionally, goes back even further, back to when I was an American Studies instructor at UNC Charlotte. I was reading her and because she was teaching at UNC Chapel Hill and doing a lot of work in the food culture space. And she really taught me, just by doing what she was doing, that a job like hers existed. And so over the years, I've met her through festivals and other professional circles. I'd heard her speak. And then last year, we started corresponding a little bit more. And so I just was so excited to get her on this year to speak about Hanukkah. And she's just a wonderful, positive voice. She's highly skilled at researching and documentation, but has just an innate kindness and empathy for the people that she is documenting. And I really think that that comes through her work. So there are so many people this season that really inspired me. They taught me to get back in the kitchen. They taught me to get back in the restaurant. And looking forward, I think we're just going to continue to see some things that changed in the pandemic remain with us. When that comes to really practical things, I think those QR code menus are here to stay. I kind of hate them, okay? I don't want to pull out my phone any more than I have to when I'm at a meal. And I think that they're frustrating for a lot of people. If you're listening to this and you are a QR code, I understand that they might be cleaner and you don't have to print menus, but I feel like something is really lost with the QR code. I'm over there fiddling with my camera. Somebody isn't able to pull up beside me. I'm not able to look at all the things at once. And it's when I go to a restaurant, I want to be low tech. I want to just sit and enjoy the meal and be able to unplug. And I feel like QR codes just start the meal off on a wrong way. But unfortunately, I sound like a little bit of an old fogey, and I think they're here to stay. I also think with that labor shortage aforementioned, that counter service, you're going to be seeing more and more of that, or counter service hybrids. It's just easier to run a restaurant when people have to come up and order what they want. Even if you have to check on them later, it's just more streamlined. And I think we're going to be seeing that. When it comes to the home cooking space, I think the real focus is not so much on cooking trends and stuff. Because, yeah, I had a cooking column in the Post and Courier, and I definitely am a home cook. But I'm minor compared to people that know about trends in food and what we're going to be cooking. What I will say is that I am seeing the continued normalization of local food hubs throughout the South. So these are places where you can get a CSA or you can get a weekly shipment. That's what I do with community supported grocery. And you can amend with the farmers market, but you're getting a weekly allotment of local foodstuffs. And it's not just from one farm. A food hub actually is like a clearinghouse, a regional grocery store or wholesale spot for a lot of farmers. And I think we're going to continue to see the normalization of that, especially with people that want to continue to get their groceries delivered. This is super convenient. It pushes you creatively in the kitchen. I mean, I have flowering broccolini right now in my fridge, and I like broccoli. I know how to cook it, but I'm honestly would never have purchased flowering broccolini, but I think it's going to be beautiful in a salad and really add a lot to my meals this week. So, those food hubs, they're great for farmers because, they have a guaranteed place. Here in Charleston, Grow Food Carolina really is the crown jewel of this. I did an early episode with Sarah Clow, who's since moved to Colorado, but Grow Food has remained and grown much bigger. And what they do is they work directly with restaurants. So some places work just with restaurants and other wholesale locations like grocery stores. And then some places work with both or just home cook, just retail. But I think you're going to continue to see this. So if you haven't seen this in your community, I would suggest that you seek it out. You look and see what's available. And this is a way for farmers markets to extend. Farmers markets are wonderful. They're wonderful community builders. You know, I'm a big proponent of these and visit them each time I go to a new place. But it's a lot of work for the farmer or the maker. Padgett Arnold of Sequatchie Cove Creamery mentioned when they were starting their cheese business, it was a great way to get in touch with consumers, but it honestly is a grind to have to get up and do two or three markets a week to try to make ends meet and try to build that business. That's just part of life, yes, but hopefully these food hubs can help extend the life cycle of a regional, seasonal farmers market and really, you know, make eating local easy, especially when you don't have to go to 15 places. You can just get a delivery. Well, that's about all I have for this year, except that I still have so many other stories to tell and so many other people to interview. I'm excited about the coming year. I already have some trips in the works for 2022, obviously safely. I'm a big proponent of getting tested before I go anywhere. I'm so used to it now. I just get a swab up the nose, wait for my negative test, and then get out on the road. But I'm excited to bring new stories to you next season. I'm going to take off the month of January. And I say that a little facetiously because I will be recording some things to release in February, and also planning some trips and writing. So I just won't be talking to you every week, but I will return the first Friday in February. If you want to make sure that you know that that's coming, please subscribe on whatever podcast app you're listening to right now. Also, if you'd like to go to thesouthernfork.com, I send a whole one newsletter a month that can give you a wrap up of other things that I've been doing, places I've been going, articles I've been writing, and also will give you like a roundup of the episodes that came out that month so you can check back on anything that you missed. So I'd love to see you over there. Otherwise, happy new year. Thanks for everything. Thanks for being on the other side of this. And I hope that in something that you eat in the next few weeks, you learn the story behind it and it makes it taste even sweeter. Until I talk to you again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?